I've reported other people's stories for a long time, confronting people in power. But behind this broadcast voice, I've hidden my greatest secret. I was in an abusive marriage. It lasted a year, but it changed my life. Part of me always blamed myself for what happened, and I've lived with the shame. So many of us live like this. It's time we change that. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Welcome to Paradise is My Story. Available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
I'm Dr. Brian Goldman. This is White Coat Black Art. These days, there are growing concerns about the quality of cancer care in BC. Long waits to see an oncologist, the longest wait times in all of Canada for radiation treatment, shortages of medical and support staff, and even the machines used to detect and treat cancer. Patients and their loved ones have much to complain about. Our show this week is about one man's formal complaint to authorities and his search for answers. He lives on Denman Island, one of just under 1,200 year-round residents of this northern Gulf island.
It's the end of the road, literally, at the north end where my house is. Yeah, there's a dead end and a turnaround.
It's hard for Charles Kinch to even acknowledge, much less accept, that he's at the end of the road.
So by the time they get to your place, they know they've gone too far?
Yes.
But you love it?
I love it because it makes it more or less pretty quiet up there.
It's one of the things I'm learning about Charles as he brings me into his isolated retreat on Denman Island.
Okay. As strange as it seems, I'm going to ask you to give... Sometimes I introduce my guests and sometimes I have them introduce myself. So I'd like you to give me a hi, my name is, and just a sentence or two about who you are and where you're living.
Okay. Hi, I'm Charles Kinch, living on Denman Island in the Gulf of Strait of Georgia, and... reminiscing about my wife, Leslie Kissel.
Leslie and Charles met at Queen's University nearly half a century ago. Both studied engineering. Their relationship blossomed from fate. Because Kinch came right before Kissel in their freshman class, they were made lab partners. They became life partners soon after. Both had incredibly successful careers as engineers and had retired. Soon after came Leslie's illness and death from advanced uterine cancer in December 2020. Charles, your wife Leslie first started having symptoms back in 2015, 2016, that ultimately led to her being diagnosed with endometrial cancer. What were her symptoms?
She had always, for many years, just had general abdominal discomfort, pain. Yeah, she had several conditions that were under treatment, including Hashimoto's thyroid condition. She had von Willebrand's disease, which is a hemophilia condition.
A bleeding disorder.
So she had always had, women's issues. But when she got to the state of finally retiring from a long career of work, it just seemed to be getting worse, and that was the 2015-16. So she had, because her work had taken her all over the place, she didn't have a practical local doctor until she finally retired and settled here. And the first doctor that she saw here was a woman doctor who, when Leslie described her conditions of post-menstrual bleeding and vaginal discharge and things like that, that doctor got extremely alarmed and made the prophetic statement, gee, this could be cancer, and if we don't get it taken care of very soon, you could be in real trouble in 5 years. And unfortunately, that was awfully prophetic because that doctor referred Leslie to a local gynecologist who took a look at her and listened to the symptoms and wasn't as excited about it as the local GP was. He tended to downplay it and said, could be any number of things. You're at that age where things happen. We'll just monitor it and wait and see.
But he did do a test called a colposcopy. A colposcopy is a diagnostic procedure in which the doctor, usually a gynecologist, uses a device to look at the cervix as well as the vagina and vulva for signs of cervical cancer.
Yeah, he did a colposcopy, but his conclusion was it was inconclusive. But rather than doing any other more serious tests, he said, we'll just wait and see. And unfortunately, the original GP retired immediately, so she was no longer advocating for Leslie. And so for the next 2 years, Leslie had regular visits every quarter with this gynecologist who just kept saying, oh, yes, you got discomfort and pain. Don't worry, we don't need to do any more tests yet.
And she went from one family physician to another, I think a total of five.
Yes. Yeah, because after that one doctor retired, another doctor retired, and you know, somebody else came in, lasted a while, then they departed, and there was a steady turnover of other GPs. So there was nobody who had the same background and connection with Leslie to be her advocate. So things just got let slip for 2 years.
And I'll come back to that a little bit later, but how did Leslie come to be diagnosed with cancer in 2018?
We had taken a quick trip to Europe thinking that it would help rejuvenate her, but when we came back, she was even more fatigued, more in pain than she had been earlier. So she just really, I guess, put her foot down with the gynecologist and said, no, this is serious. You've got to do more tests. And which he finally did do over a couple of months, including biopsies and DNCs and whatnot, until finally he actually agreed, whoops, there is cancer.
That was in November 2018. That month, Leslie had a total hysterectomy, and the tissue was sent to pathology.
The pathology results that came back for that was stage 1B endometrial and ovarian cancer.
And I think Leslie was told, or perhaps you were told, or she told you, that at that point there was consideration to doing a lymph node biopsy to see, to remove the lymph nodes to see if the cancer had spread to the lymph nodes.
Yes, actually she said that's what the gynecologist advised her on going into the hysterectomy, that, oh yeah, we should look at the lymph nodes around there because that is a standard migration vector for endometrial and ovarian cancer.
That's where it spreads.
That's where it tends to spread too. She only found out later that in that hysterectomy, he didn't take any lymph tissue, but didn't tell her about it until she found out another doctor told her in reading historical notes that there was no lymph tissue taken and tested. So after that hysterectomy, she was recommended for radiation therapy in order to help suppress the chance for that migration to the lymph system. She did go through that.
25 treatments,
5 days a week for 5 weeks. But that was down in Victoria, which is a ferry ride and a 3-hour drive away. And so she did organize rides to get there and back and stayed in a hostel down there. But that was a real strain, which is typical of the rural environment that we live in up here. Things aren't close by. They're hours and hours away.
There was no chemo at that time.
They didn't recommend chemo at that time, which was always curious to Leslie.
And at this point, she was a patient of the BC Cancer Agency.
Yeah, she was a patient of the BC Cancer Agency, but she also wasn't happy with, because when she was in Victoria for those 5 weeks, a radiation oncologist was the only doctor that she really talked to. And that doctor was very low on the communication end.
What does that mean?
They'd have scheduled meetings. The doctor would show up late, or leave early, and during the meeting only really want to talk about how the radiation was going and didn't want to talk about overall prognosis, you know, follow up, other aspects, you know, that Leslie had questions about.
Leslie had stage 1B endometrial cancer, which means the cancer had extended into the muscle of the womb. The Canadian Cancer Society says that the standard treatment for stage 1B is total hysterectomy with optional radiation and chemo depending on how aggressive the cancer appears to be. Stage 1B can be cured. 3 out of every 4 people live at least 5 years. But that means 1 out of every 4 doesn't make it that far.
Did anybody talk to the two of you about the prognosis at that time when she was getting her initial round of treatment?
They just said by catching it at stage 1B, the prognosis was pretty good that it would not migrate. It was all they would say was low probability of migration. And Leslie kept pressing them, like, what does low mean? Is that 5%, 10%, 20%? Being an engineer, she wanted numbers and specificity. And you know, the doctors she talked to just were awfully vague, which frustrated Leslie no end.
And as you found out subsequently, they didn't examine the lymph nodes to know if the beginnings of that migration, that spread had actually occurred.
Right.
How was she feeling during this time?
She just felt crummy, lousy, still fatigued, still with abdominal pains. But because the oncologists were all down in Victoria, a 6-hour drive, return drive to get there, she opted not to do follow-up sessions down there because they were saying it was just going to be with that same oncologist who didn't talk to her much in the first place. So she opted just go back and to have follow-up treatment by local doctors. But BC Cancer Agency just put her back to that same gynecologist who took 2 years to find the first cancer. And what she found was he was sort of equally dismissive and downplaying her state for the next year by saying, oh, you're just slow in recovery. Don't worry. It's just, you'll get over it.
But then during 2019... into 2020, her health took a turn for the worse. What was happening?
She started feeling pain and a lump in her armpit, which she said could be a lymph node to me. She continued to have abdominal pains in other parts of her abdomen, and she actually developed a growth in her nether regions on her vulva. And she said she specifically asked the gynecologist if that could get removed because it was awkward and painful. And he said, oh, it's just a cyst. It'll likely go away on its own. And for a year, it didn't go away. It just got worse until a full year later, which was March 2020. He finally agreed, okay, I will schedule more tests and schedule removal of that cyst. And then COVID happened. Everything got suspended, delayed, and it wasn't until May of 2020 that Leslie got her fifth GP from Denman, who turned out to be another wonderful woman, like the first, woman GP, who took one look at Leslie and said, I'm totally alarmed. Looks like you've got migrated cancer. She started making personal phone calls to get blood tests scheduled, CT scans scheduled, and the CT scan did come back with multiple lesions around her torso, which fully indicated widespread cancer. And the gynecologist did remove the cyst, and he did a big oops afterwards by saying, oh, that was cancerous malignant and had already spread beyond the confines of that area. I couldn't even take the whole thing out because it would compromise surrounding areas.
What was it like for Leslie to get that news? Was she alone? Was she with you?
She was alone, but came back to explain it all to me. And we had, a long, tearful conversation about that too. Except that it's awful, but I guess that is what has happened.
Leslie now had recurrent metastatic cancer. With treatment, the median survival is about a year. Charles says Leslie was not one to dwell on the past or regret for things she could not change.
She was ultimately practical. She had always worked in construction, in engineering, on big projects, some of whom go well, some go bad, mistakes get made. But if things don't go right, figure out what is going wrong, figure out what you need to do next, be practical, don't let outside things conquer you and put you down.
She was offered chemo. She tried it a couple of times, three times. And
Twice. Went through two rounds of chemo. It was one day each week for a number of weeks. She got through 2 weeks. Her reaction was so bad and painful, she quickly started losing her hair, losing weight, having extra pain. Pain meds they gave her wasn't adequate. 5 days after the second chemo, she asked me to call 911, got an ambulance, and took her to the emergency in Comox. And she was admitted and stayed there for 4 days. And it was, again, not a BC Cancer Agency doctor, but it was the acute care doctor in the hospital who looked up all of her records and said, "Are you fully aware this is stage four? This is terminal. You are, you do not have months and years to live. You have weeks to months."
We'll be right back.
I've reported other people's stories for a long time, confronting people in power. But behind this broadcast voice, I've hidden my greatest secret. I was in an abusive marriage. It lasted a year, but it changed my life. Part of me always blamed myself for what happened, and I've lived with the shame. So many of us live like this. It's time we change that. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Welcome to Paradise is My Story. Available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
You're listening to White Coat, Black Art. This week, Charles Kinch searches for answers in the death of his wife, Leslie Kissel, from uterine cancer. In August 2020, the couple found out that Leslie's cancer had recurred and metastasized. She refused offers of more chemo and radiation treatment. That November, she entered a hospice in Comox on Vancouver Island.
She made all sorts of phone calls to friends and colleagues. I brought her books and maps and diaries of old travels. She talked to people about all sorts of things. She was totally focused on talking to friends, saying goodbyes, regaling people with stories of our travels and stories of her history. She was into keep the fond memories up and downplay thinking about that future. But she did have ups and downs, and finally she had a bad day and they put her on much stronger meds, which sedated her into just a sleepy state. And from that point on, I just stayed with her 24 hours a day. They set up a cot next to her bed. I just stayed there with her for a full week until finally, December 10th, in the middle of the night, she stopped breathing and was gone. And so for me, that was both a relief and a tragedy.
I'm sorry. She was 70 years old. Did she ever express frustration? Did she ever say, after I'm gone, I want you to get some answers?
Not explicitly. She did say, gee, that really didn't happen at all the way it should have. Things were screwed up. And both as lifelong career engineers, we've been involved in many projects, many of which haven't always gone right, and there's been quality audits, there's been quality reviews. A quality audit is find out what went wrong, call to action, make recommendations, make sure it doesn't happen again. So that is the sort of thing that we talked about that we had seen elsewhere in other engineering and just wondered why that didn't happen and wasn't happening in the medical system.
6 weeks following Leslie's death, Charles emailed BC's Patient Care Quality Office, the agency that investigates complaints. He said the BC Cancer Agency failed to recognize the cancer early enough and that there was essentially zero follow-up to check for recurrence. A review will not bring her back, he wrote. but I hope it will initiate changes in the policies, procedures, and treatment of patients given by some practitioners to reduce the probability of her fate being experienced by others." End quote. 2 months later, the Patient Care Quality Office reply arrived. It noted that Leslie had canceled 2 follow-up appointments scheduled after her radiation treatment ended. The reply also said the follow-up Leslie received from her gynecologist was consistent with surveillance recommendations.
The reply was, it wasn't that no one looked at her. What they pointed out was Leslie declined a follow-up visit to her oncologist in Victoria, which I said was because she got no joy out of that oncologist anyway. She just didn't want to go all the way back to Victoria for, you know, nothing, and relied on local, you know, doctors. And they pointed out, well, she saw that local doctor 4 times in the next year, and that was consistent with BC Cancer's surveillance recommendation. And that's all they said. And then they made a statement about, unfortunately, some cancers, even with surveillance, some cancers go undetected. With future scientific research, possibly we might find more about migration biology and do a better job in the future, period. That was it. That was their whole reply.
You weren't happy with that response?
Not happy with that response, to put it mildly. And another little incident that got my back up was at the end of January, after I'd sent off that first complaint, I got a letter in the mail from the BC Cancer Agency reminding Leslie that she should show up for a screening mammogram.
After she died.
After, you know, she died. And so I called them up and said, no, she's not going to show up because she died more than a month ago of cancer under the care of BC Cancer Agency. Why are you sending a reminder notice 6 weeks later after she died?
Not satisfied with the reply, Charles asked the office to take a second and much more detailed look at Leslie's care. The Patient Care Quality Office asked senior executives of BC Cancer in Victoria to conduct a review with the healthcare staff involved. The office sent a more detailed reply 5 months later, but again, it said the care and follow-up that Leslie received was appropriate. When you looked at the substance of the reply to the second complaint letter, was there anything in there that made you think, oh, they've listened to me?
No, it was absolutely, you know, the only response that I felt from reading that was, we've justified everything that happened. We made no mistakes. There is no reason for anything to change. Everything was done according to standard protocols and guidelines. Nothing needs to change, which is just totally counter to the concept that anybody else has of what a quality review is. A quality review is always, what do we do better to make sure it doesn't happen again?
What gives you the conviction that they're wrong and you're right?
A long career in telecommunications engineering, and also observing Leslie in a career of construction engineering and looking at Transportation Safety Board investigations whenever a plane goes down and somebody dies or a train is derailed. Those organizations always generate a quality review that is explicitly aimed at recommendations of action that will change things to make sure the same thing doesn't happen again. The medical system seems unique in taking that opposite view of trying to downplay things to say, nothing needs to change, we're doing okay.
How would you do it differently if you were in charge?
I think I would try and put together a truly independent group of people with medical expertise, but not, you know, what the PCQO did was they approached the executives of the organization being reviewed and just ask them to justify it, to investigate and justify. I mean, that's like asking the police to investigate a police shooting. We all can now know that doesn't often work well, so they get independent investigation offices to look at police, you know, brutality and police, yeah, incidents. And I think for the medical system, they've got to get somebody who is independent of the organization being investigated to go and interview people, look at records, and ask questions, not just let them justify their own response.
And if they had had an independent investigator, you think the result would have been different?
Yes.
We asked BC's Provincial Health Services Authority if they have any further comment. Due to privacy considerations, they said they're unable to discuss any specifics of patients. A spokesperson said patients or families who remain dissatisfied with a review by the Patient Care Quality Office also have the opportunity to request an independent review by the Patient Care Quality Review Board. When we showed that reply to Charles, he had this to say. My motive from the beginning of raising a complaint and of talking to White Coat Blackguard has been to seek contact with anyone who can be a catalyst for change to improve the diagnostics and treatment of all future cancer patients. So I'm looking forward to investigating this further.
So it's a Caesar dressing that Leslie taught me how to make. All homemade with local eggs and garlic and anchovies, and lots of nice things. A few croutons. Mm-hmm.
Charles makes me dinner, a brief respite from eating alone. Leslie's memory lives here not just in the Caesar dressing she taught him, but the exquisite garden outside. The house they built is at the end of a road Charles knows very well. More uncertain is the end of the journey to find the answers he seeks. Last question I'm going to ask you. If Leslie were still alive, what do you think she'd say about this whole process that you've been through?
She'd say, I'm so sorry I had to put you through this. I hope you are not too adversely affected by it and that you can recover and get on with your own life. And if she was still around and in recovery, we would be moving ahead. You know, we would look to things that we wanted to do. I certainly hope for other people's sake that things get improved, but in the meantime, I'm moving ahead with my life.
And I hope you continue to do so. And I want to thank you for speaking with me.
You're quite welcome. It's been a trial, but happy to have done it.
Charles Kinch is not the first grieving relative or patient to be dissatisfied by the way the healthcare system deals with complaints. In the weeks ahead, we'll search for a better way. That's our show this week. If you'd like to comment, our email address is whitecoat@cbc.ca. White Coat Black Art was produced this week by Jeff Goods and me, with help from Sujata Berry and Stephanie Dubois. Our digital producer is Ruby Buiza. Our senior producer is Colleen Ross. That's medicine from my side of the gurney. I'm Brian Goldman. See you next week.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.